convening today to get presentation on the National Health Insurance Grant, which has since been reconfigured into the National Health Grant as one of its components. Just to remind you, honourable members, and for the benefit of the DG, we requested the department to appear before us and just give us an update as to on the grant. This is after we realized that last year the grant started very slowly in terms of performance, and that picked up towards the third and the fourth quarter of the year, but ultimately almost all provinces underperformed. So we felt and the fact that now the grant has been reconfigured and forms part of this National Health Grant, we felt that we should interact with yourself to get to understand what the challenges are and how far are we with the project itself. And we did not deliberately invite provinces simply because we are quite aware that your report will just give the summary or consolidated summary of all the reports from provinces, so that we deliberately invited the National Department so that we can have enough time with yourself. And then we can thereafter be in the position to interact with provinces as we do our constituency work, as well as we call them to appear before the committee on other various grants. So briefly, that is the purpose of the meeting. We have until 12:30, the latest, 1 o'clock, and that's just a brief outline of today's meeting. And with regard to apologies, honourable members, I've got 3 apologies. One from Honourable Faku. She's not feeling well. She's gone to see a doctor. Honourable Bloom has got a clashy meeting, so he prioritised the meeting with Cocta. And Honourable Zulu missed his flight. So those are the 3 apologies that we have. Otherwise, other members will be joining us shortly. In the absence of any other apology, we'll move. There will be just slight changes to the program, our members. We'll start straight away with the National Department, and then National Treasurer will come at the end. So, without any waste of time, members.
Good morning, honourable members. I would like to first start by introducing the team. I've got here Ms. Jeanette Hunter, who's the Deputy Director General. She was acting during my absence. As you know, I've just arrived back in the country. I was attending the World Health Assembly and the Executive Board. I'm now the Executive Board member and Vice Chair of the World Health Organization. So I asked that because they prepared this in advance, and I thought it would be improper for me, but I also wanted to share with you what is it that I think we've done in this pilot district. I also have Mr. Van der Merwe, who is our DDG but the CFO, Mr. Moremi Ngosi, who is our health economist, technical officer responsible for oversight for these grants, Mr. Vishal Prajal, who is with the Clinton Foundation, but he's specifically doing the assessments in every grant, meaning we've got teams, he's put together teams of people who are on site all the time, and we can share with you what is it that the teams have done. Melanie Volmarans is responsible for information. She's got all the data about every district in this country, including the NHI pilot site, and we've got our parliamentary officer. So any question about anything on pilot sites, I hope we'll be able to answer. Honorable chairs, chair and members, this should I come closer to the mic?
No. He did not hear your first comment around your appointment as a vice chair. If you can repeat that for his benefit.
No, I was apologizing that I was not in the country. So when these slides were prepared, I just arrived and I was appointed. I'm now the vice chair of the executive board of the World Health Organization. And that I'm doing as South Africa. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Chair, I wanted to just say that this is out of the press. As you see, it's dated 30 May 2013. We requested that there must be an independent appraisal of the NHI pilot sites. So DFID funded this appraisal. So it outlines exactly what happened in every district with respect to the list that is on the Treasury document. So unfortunately, I got this yesterday and carried this myself this way. I had hoped that it would have been printed last week because we would have had an opportunity to read this and would have a much more meaningful discussion. But I'm hoping that I still have this opportunity. But I'd really like you to read this and see what is it that is missing. In fact, from what I read and what I've seen, it's actually a mixed picture of the outcome of what is happening in the district, but I think this will be part of the presentation. Thank you. I'll hand over to Ms. Jeanette Hunter and the CFO, but I'll take questions. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members. I was told that we have 15 minutes for this presentation. I'm going to try to finish even before the 30 minutes. We have substantially prepared in terms of your questions, specifically about the finance, about the grant, but we thought it would be incomplete if we come and speak about the finance without also briefly just telling you what we did with the money. So I am going to interrupt my presentation and not deal with all slides, but rather give you more time for questions, if the chair would allow me. So our first presentation will speak about the grant and how we did on the third and fourth quarters for the last financial year that ended at the end of March. So what this presentation contains is a bit of background. It gives you summaries in terms of provincial expenditures for quarter three and quarter four. It also gives total grant expenditure. We do have a summary of the challenges impacting on expenditure within the provinces. We raise some monitoring and evaluation matters, and we also have one slide on the way forward. Chair, as background, we received 150 million for the last financial year, and each pilot district, 11 of them, received 11.5 million. The focus of this funding was on testing innovations that are necessary for the implementation of the National Health Insurance. It was to undertake health system strengthening initiatives in identified districts, again, in preparation for the National Health Insurance. It was to provide strategic resources for supporting the pilot district in implementing selected health services delivery interventions. So I'm just going to show you an example from one province, and this is what I mean. I'm not going to go through all of them, and if you have specific questions about specific provinces, you could ask that. So if we take Eastern Cape, not because we're picking on the Eastern Cape, but it happens to be the first in the series of slides, you will see what Eastern Cape's expenditure was over that time. And I'm not going to read it because I'm sure the members have taken that in. The challenges that the Eastern Cape is giving forward in terms of, if I could go back, of course, you'll also see when we have the summary slide that the expenditure is not what one would have wished, And so the challenges put forward is there was a delay in notification of the availability of funds to the districts. And this was the first year of the fund. So these are teething problems that we've identified and we've worked around ways now to not encounter the same problems this year and to go full steam ahead. There were district capacity constraints like lack of key HR in essential categories, human resources in essential categories, inadequate technical support, supply chain hurdles, delays in getting approvals. And if I was to go through all the provinces, you would see that the challenges are more or less the same throughout the provinces. So I'm going to interrupt the slide just to go to a different area. Suggesting we go through every slide, but just quickly, this is what Free State looks like.
No, don't worry about time. It's only you today, so you have got enough time.
View slideshow. It doesn't work like it's supposed to. So wait, I'll be with you now. There we are. Free State. This is what Free State looks like. And then their challenges, reprioritization of funds allocated to activities, and then again supply chain management hurdles. Gauteng, this is what Gauteng looks like. The challenges, no support or guidance from relevant officials at provincial office, significant hurdles in procurement processes, delays in getting information on budget goals, staff shortages in key areas, lack of ability to employ staff on long-term basis using the NHI conditional grant funding, for example, clinical staff, sessional staff, doctors, etc. KZN, this is what it looks like. You might wonder about minuses. The minuses is when expenditure was against the wrong financial programs or expenditure that should not have been against this grant happened, and then when we corrected it, the financial activity would actually show a minus for that year. So it would be whatever they spent minus what was wrongly allocated against this grant, and you could end up with a negative figure. The challenges in KZN, again, structural administrative processes, bureaucratic processes that hamper innovation. The process for obtaining signatures needs to be streamlined. So as you would see, it's a whole lot of process issues. But I think this was a brilliant exercise to actually find out what are the weak processes within provinces, because those weak processes have been bedeviling what provinces should have been doing all along. And so this pilot implementation was, it just shows it was so necessary to actually zoom in specifically on those process issues, and it's giving us an opportunity together with the provinces to address these, because if we don't, service provision to the people on the ground will always fall short. Limpopo, this is what Limpopo looks like. Limpopo challenges, as you can see, inappropriate, incorrect budget coding, again, supply chain management hurdles. I think it's no secret to any South African that takes public service in any area seriously to know that we do have supply chain problems. And again, the piloting within this district has allowed us not to guess anymore about what problems are, but to know specifically what the problems around supply chain management are so that we can specifically address them and solve them. challenges in identifying relevant providers to undertake some activities due to limited database, technical and administrative support from provinces inadequate. This is what it looked like in Mpumalanga. Challenges, it goes around HR issues, it goes around delegations, so people could take prompt decisions and act upon those decisions, and again, supply chain hurdles. Northern Cape, this is what expenditure in Northern Cape looks like. Challenges are the same, procedural issues if it's not HR. Northwest, this is what Northwest looks like. Challenges, reprioritization of activities. They needed a provincial NHI coordinator because you need someone dedicated to take charge of this area if we dream to succeed in the area. Challenges in identifying relevant providers to undertake some activities due to limited database, and then inability to spend on infrastructure, for example, clinics, motor vehicles, etc., and it's because of manpower and know-how shortage. Western Cape, this is what the expenditure in the Western Cape looks like. Challenges, delays in finalizing business plan impacted on progress. Approval was only granted for the business plan August 2012. They encountered some challenges in undertaking work around governance arrangements at community level and community health centers. There were delays in getting a supporting legal opinion on the exact roles, responsibilities, and functioning of clinic committees. Those were governance issues. So I think the members will find this very helpful, because slide after slide it just shows under expenditure, but at least, as the minister always says, it's not a competition, but one could see, you know, if there's any norms or any trends and so on in terms of spending. So this is the national picture. Ian, this is in millions, eh? Yeah. So 37 million for the Western Cape,
Northwest.
37,000. Quarter, not the year. 37,000 and then 1.3 million, 366, 1.6 for Mpumalanga, 140,000 for Limpopo, GP, just about, Gauteng, just about 2 million, KwaZulu-Natal, it's got a minus figure. And then for that quarter, Free State 4 million and the Eastern Cape 268,000. And quarter four, as you can see, it improved markedly in quarter four. Then, in terms of the DORA implementation, Ian will explain the slide. And then the total expenditure, I think this is a more significant slide. It shows the total expenditure for the whole year instead of just separate quarters. And then the important column here is the commitments column, because it shows by the end of the financial year, by the end of March, what was committed by the provinces to go forward to be spent as we start the new financial year. Now, a summary of challenges, if we would summarize what all the provinces were saying, there's weak human resource capacity in some of the districts, there's weak provincial technical support, delays in budgets being communicated to some pilot sites, incorrect budget capturing, significant supply chain management challenges in many districts, and lack of necessary delegations to perform outlined activities. I think if we must take one thing as a priority and address it as health service providers, is to get our supply chain management right in all nine provinces. Issues around monitoring and evaluation, and these are mainly issues, activities that we've undertaken to improve the monitoring and evaluation of the grant. We appointed a financial skills, a health economist, and also serious monitoring and evaluation skills to assist us with this issue in terms of this grant. And then we got all provinces to submit month-to-month financial data, and we use this to compile in-year monitoring data. Quarterly reports and meetings with all sites to look at spending and to look at how we could assist to improve it, and also to make sure that it's spent on what it should be spent, if you would see those reverse payments that actually resulted in negative figures for some provinces during some periods. So together with the provinces, we identified shortfalls and challenges. Together we identified quick win activities and interventions appropriate to preparation for the National Health Insurance. And we also expedited expenditure on commitments in approved where there were approved business plans, and we assessed the progress on the operational plans. Of course, as you can see, there was a prioritization process. And then, of course, focus on the quality of spending. It's not just about spending the money, but making sure how we spend the money indeed prepare the environment for the NHI. In terms of the way forward, so there was a question on, you know, what are we doing to address the shortfalls and challenges that were showed in the other slides. DG will expand. But I think in this slide, we're trying to show that we met, we looked at specifics, and we actually addressed the specifics in the provinces to improve that. So as you saw quarter three and you saw quarter four and the interventions that we talk about in the previous slide has definitely brought about improvements, and I think these improvements will just continue into the next financial year. And then also we looked at the DORA framework to adjust the purpose, focus, activities and funding allocations to provinces, and these adjustments allowed the department to be stronger in terms of our interventions in the provinces. We were also able to influence the scope of the work undertaken at these pilot sites, and also we could make changes as this was required across the districts. In terms of the way forward, we split the grant into two components. There's a direct component and there's an in-kind component. The direct component speaks to the district piloting, and then the in-kind, we're going to do the general practitioner contracting and work around central hospitals. And then a new focus area, as we're going to strengthen the supply chain management, as this was really highlighted as a weakness nearly in all areas. We'll be supporting the rollout of the primary healthcare streams and their role within the district referral system. We'll also be strengthening monitoring and evaluation capacity at the district level. Mobilize funding for appointment of provincial NHI coordinators. We've appointed some in post, and where we couldn't find, because it's not just about just grabbing people off the street and putting them in charge in a province in terms of NHI coordination. You need to make sure you find people with the right skills. So where we couldn't find people, there are people acting in the provinces, you know, dedicated provincial staff that's in the interim playing that role. And this is to assist in coordination, project management, and monitoring and evaluation functions. That's the end of our slide, talking specifically to finances, Chairperson. There is the report, so I'm also just going to go briefly over the presentation that speaks to what we have done with the funding. So as the report also says, we talk about National Health Insurance Pilot District's 12-month progress report. I'm not going to this background is slightly different to the financial background, so I have to deal with it. In August 2011, we released the NHI Green Paper, which had an action plan for the way forward. In April 2012, NHI Pilot District's we started preparing those to get them ready to purchase services, to engage with the private sector, to have collaboration in terms of service provision in the public sector, and we're also working towards introducing a district health authority. April 2013, we did the rapid appraisal to see where we are, and it culminated into the report, brand of the fresh off the press that you've just received this morning. But the contents of this presentation also speaks to what you will find in the report. The domains prepared for NHI readiness with management in terms of the NHI hospitals, we looked at quality, we looked at those priorities, primary healthcare re-engineering, how do we implement them as best as possible to get the most feasible results for our people that we serve. We looked at infrastructure and equipment, the human resources, health information. We're looking at the capacity of district health management teams because the success of providing quality health services to the people of South Africa actually hinges around the capacity of the district management teams. We need the people closest to service provision to have the skills, to have the delegations, to be able to ensure that services are provided. You'll know at the moment, because I do think you do visits to the ground, that there's a lot of finger pointing currently. If there's no drugs in clinics, if people talk about sitting in long queues, if people talk about being turned away, there's finger pointing. The sub-district will say it's district management that didn't do ABCD. District management will say it's the province that didn't do ABCD. And the province will say it's national. And finally, when you come to us, we just point the fingers right back. But I think as South Africans, going forward and implementing the NHI, we need to make sure that the district management team has the capacity to ensure that there's access to quality services. And there should be an authority closer to the district management team who's accountable, that the buck stops with them. And I think ultimately when we as South Africans become tired of the finger-pointing, it goes back to the Minister of Health, no matter who the Minister of Health is, to say, but you are the person that was put there by the people to look after the people's health. So we also need to look at the district management team. We need to look at this accountable authority close to the district management team. And what is the chain to the minister? We need to look at the current situation. How we perhaps bedevil keeping structures accountable for health and see how we want to change that members. I just needed to pause and talk about that for a while. We also looked at how best to apply the conditional grant. The referral system is very, very important. We are thinking, remember, there's only still just a green paper, which is a policy paper. Soon there will be a white paper that the country will discuss, but as the health department, we're looking at maybe phasing the process and getting primary healthcare facilities to the NHI to start with primary healthcare facilities. But still, we're not going to split the health system. When people need secondary care or tertiary care, they should get it. So a proper referral system is going to be very, very key in this country. We say, you know, the language, South Africans develop language. So often a new suburb built will be called after the contractors, and you forget what the suburb's name is. So we talk about NHI readiness, but I think as South Africans we know when we talk about NHI readiness and the NHI, what we're ultimately talking about is universal access for every South African to quality services. And so a referral system is going to be tantamount to success for that universal access. And then, of course, contracting private providers to make sure where there's gaps in our facilities, those gaps get filled. So just the key, we're going to show you performances within these districts against key indicators. So when it's green, it's nearly or completely achieved. When it's yellow, it's partially achieved. When it's red, it's minimal or not achieved, and then white, no data was available. And, of course, there will be gray area where it wasn't time for that milestone yet. So if we look at management and coordination, the NHI management and coordination, I mentioned earlier that some provinces have got full-time NHI project managers. Where there's none available, we put interim managers. And then in terms of hospital reform, we did some district hospital redesignation. You can see where there's full-time CEOs at the hospitals. You also see where CEOs have been oriented through the Leadership and Management Academy. And then in terms of quality, you'll also see what's happening there, and all this is in the hard copy report that we that we've just distributed. Then you will remember that the National Department of Health commissioned and completed a baseline study to look at how our facilities are doing against a number of key indicators in terms of the service delivery platform. And so if you look at what the baseline scores were and how districts compared when we recently went and looked at some indicators in the pilot site, it's actually disconcerting to see that overall, except for Thabo Mofutsinyane, there's actually been a slip in terms of performance, and we need to address this together with the provinces. PHC re-engineering, City of Tswane has got a full district specialist team in place. You see full 7 members, and so is Dr. Kenneth Kahunda. And as you can see, no one is red there. Everybody is in process. So our target was for that year to have throughout the 11 districts, a district specialist team with at least 3 members. And that target was more or less achieved, except for Amajuba and Umzinyati, but those were recent movements. We actually had full teams there, but you know specialists are scarce skills in South Africa and they are constantly recruited. Ward-based outreach teams, I think we can do much better there. And then also school health, required number of teams in place. There's only 3 districts with a green, so we can also do much, much better there. In terms of infrastructure, Geert se Bande needs attention, and then hospitals, major refurbishment over the past 12 months, it also still needs attention, and then PHC facilities needing major refurbishment also needs a lot of attention. Equipment audit in the primary healthcare facilities, So it just shows where we are with reassessing the 11 districts. And in terms of human resources for health, although for some areas there's no data, at least we don't have any reds there. Health management information. When we were in this house earlier this year, Chairperson, we had raised the fact that South Africa in the health sector is notorious for not managing with information. We've made strides, but we still have a long way to go with having the information in a database, but also making sure, if you look at the last line, districts with access to the National Health Indicator database, it's totally, totally red, and this is about having network access to the districts and enabling them to access this live on the web. So we still have a long way to go there. District management, annual district health expenditure review completed. The country is doing well because the national department has been supporting the provinces for a long time now in that area, and we can see it's bearing fruit. District NHI master plan in place, Geert se Bande and Ungungung Luvu needs attention. The NHI conditional grant percentage spent up to 30 March 2013. We are not perfect, but it's not such a bleak picture. And then in terms of referral systems, there are some areas in OR Tambo and Geert se Bande that needs attention. General practitioners in districts on national contract. We have identified the facilities by districts where general practitioners are needed to do sessions. And then facilities assessed as being ready for the general practitioners. There's still work to be done there. And then the number of GPs on national contract, the model ready contracting due in 2013-14, we are still working on that, and that's why it's great. It's not like we haven't met our target yet. In summary, we've got NHI management and coordination in place, and together with the provinces, we are realigning the priorities for the district health management teams. The NHI conditional grant have contributed to progress, quality improvement, interventions are still underway, hospital reform is being introduced, referral mechanisms are in place, but we have to perfect this because the success is going to hinge around referral mechanisms that work like clockwork. Primary healthcare re-engineering, the three streams, you've seen, I've shown you on the robot graph how we're doing this. And then health staff remain insufficient. We are using the World Health Organization's workload indicator need norms and standards to determine the true situation in terms of staff need and to address that. In terms of private providers, the districts are ready for private GPs to work alongside nurses in primary health care facilities. We are just perfecting that because we also need this to work beautifully. And Chairperson, I thank you for allowing us to do the presentation. The DG will take the session forward.
Thank you, Chair. This is a mixed picture. Like I said, as she was presenting, I was trying to ask her to refer members because it's very difficult to follow the numbers. I thought she would refer members to the actual report because it's much easier to follow. It's Roman figures. It's actually the first few pages. Roman figures 3, 4, 5. It's in the first few pages. And I just want to take members through that. I'm sorry it will be like a repetition, but it's a necessary repetition. And this is specifically in relation to the grant and the questions that were in the framework. Firstly, if you look at what the grant purpose was, the grant purpose was that we were going to test innovations that are necessary to implement national health insurance. Chair, in any health reform, it's very important to see what works and what doesn't. And within the grant, I must confess that we didn't use the grant to test innovations. We used development aid money to test innovations. And I want to say what is it we did. We took unemployed graduates, about 400 of them. And these were unemployed graduates with degrees in finance, in IT, and human resources. We put them in Charlotte Macleke to test as to what is it that we could do to improve revenue generation. And we didn't want to do this in every hospital because we have picked up the hospitals. And in any event, the grant would not have been enough to employ all of them, all 400. And in fact, if we did, we would have used all the grant money. It was a very important exercise because in Charlotte Macleke, whilst we're going to address revenue generation, which is what was provided for in the grant, it didn't work out because the computer systems were down all the time. And we asked the question, the people who come to work daily, what do they do? They said, no, they come, they sit the whole day, read newspapers and go home. So we said, okay, so it means we can't do revenue generation in Charlotte Macleke. We went back to say, okay, let's start and look at business processes. We said, if these people come daily and they don't work, do they earn salaries? Yes. So how are they paid? They took us to a room full of pay slips that are never collected. We said, okay, tell us, whose pay slips are these? Meaning, we had gone there to collect revenue, but we then picked up a whole lot of problems. Now, we're using Charlotte Macleke to look at a model for revenue collection. We wanted to do that, but we're using development aid. Chair, we then decided, okay, let's shelve this revenue collection and start with this exercise of the pay slips, because we want to know why are people not collecting that. Is it ghost employees or what? Then we started a process where we said every single employee in Charlotte Matlake must bring their ID and come and tell us if they're employed, and we confirmed everybody who works for Charlotte Matlake. Now, when we finished that exercise, we then went to HR to say we want your HR processes, meaning it led, one thing led to the other. And I'm giving this background because this has been the case in every province where we said, and hence we said NHR will not work until we address these small problems. So what we did, Chair, we went back again to look at the revenue. We said, okay, fine, let's look at the amount of revenue that we've collected. Now, Charlotte Matlake had lost a revenue of 218 million over a three-year period, meaning what the revenue that's supposed to be collected, they had not collected that for 3 years. We said, okay, we then invited the World Bank to work with us. We trained these interns and started a process. Now, the computer system was down 80% of the time. They were using old computers. So we took our own money at National through the development aid grant and bought 200 computers for Charlotte Matlake so that the system could work. What we wanted to do was to see whether we could have a model that we could replicate in other central hospitals. We did that, I think, from May until September. Now, in September, from May to September, we had collected a revenue of about 38 million, just in that short period. So we said, okay, because we could do that, but the system, because it needed a new server and so on, is at 80%. The reason is at 80% is because we are disagreeing with the province in that for it to run at 100%, it needs some cabling. And that cabling, the province wanted to pay 47 million, and we said no, because the World Bank gave us an opinion that that cabling can only cost not more than 10 million. So there's a dispute. So the system is still running at 80%, not 100%. And I think if it runs at 100%, I think we could probably have collected more revenue. So what we did, we took the same interns, but not all of them. Some of them, we put them in Sibiko. And then we took some and put them in George Mukhari. Now, our findings in Sibiko, again, surprises. There were problems with, again, filing. Now, the interns who were supposed to replicate the model from Charlotte Matlake to Sibiko started by doing filing from scratch. Now, we actually have pictures, Chair, if you want. We have these big, what are these things that collect rubbish after you've built? Rubble, full of paper that had to be shredded just to create filing space and bring some semblance of order in administration. So we're starting with basic administration before we even start the collection. But now, in Sibiko, it was a different experience in that the system that they're using, Gauteng has not been paying the supplier, and the contract has ended. Now, the system is due to an upgrade. Now, it has not been upgraded. But at least Sibiko is collecting revenue. But we were looking at how systematic are they relative to Charlotte Matlake. In George Mukhari, we also have pictures of files that are on the stairs. People can't even walk on those stairs. So we, again, started a process, again, administration, shredding files so that we can create office space and so on. So we start with administration and work on the thing. So now what we have done, based on the model we started at Charlotte Matlake, we've decided, because it's an important thing now, we can now collect revenue. And we would like to expand that to all the tertiary hospitals. Chair, you probably need to know that the only province that had good systems of revenue collection is Western Cape. And Tigerberg. So we wanted to work on the basis of that. And why we wanted to look at the model check is because the World Bank publications show you that if you read some of their publications, they show you that if you give delegations and you give authorities to CEOs, there's an incentive for them to collect revenue. And only if you allow them to retain a certain amount. So we wanted to understand what is that amount that will serve as an incentive, because we also don't know whether we should recommend that CEOs of hospitals should retain the whole amount of revenue that they collect, or whether they should just retain a certain percentage. And I think in this modeling, this is the kind of thing we wanted to do. So we assumed when we wrote this that revenue is collected. It's a given. We're going to go there, look at the models, and so on. But we're pleasantly surprised that we had to start from basic things, filing, and we converted this thing. But it was worth an investment because we're building the system. I thought I should talk about that. The second one, Chair, that I thought I should share with you, you might have seen that we did the audit of our health facilities. So what we did, we put together the facility improvement teams, which are reflected in this page on three under quality improvement. The innovation that we're trying to introduce, because we said, okay, we have the results. The results show that quality is not so good in our facilities. It's good in some and not others. So the question was, we could do one thing, ask the provinces to say, yes, here's a report, improve quality. And our view was that it may not happen. So we decided to take teams. I said National Health has a staff complement of about 1,300 people. Surely, they must go and spend time solving the problems. So we set up teams, and in the teams we made sure that there were complements of people with finance, HR, and technical areas. And in the teams, initially, we did not include NHI, all NHI pilot sites. We excluded we had Mangaung, which is not an NHI pilot site. We had Sidibeng, and we also had Zululand. So it was, the numbers went beyond the NHI pilot sites. And we sent the team's chair. I think it was a very revealing experience in that, on one hand, you've got motivated health workers who don't have tools. On the other, you've got teams that are just waiting there, hopeless. So it's a combination of things. So we have a report for each of the pilot sites. But what we did subsequent to that, we said the model should be such that they must not go there with a briefcases with solutions. They must go there and come up with systems together with the partners. Now in Pixley, Kasem, they partnered, they came up with an approach, let me call it an approach, whereby the private sector works with a local government and the facility and the community to solve the problem. So Pixley Kaseme is probably a model that we should use in the country to solve the problem in facilities so that people can have ownership. Now, as a result, Nedbank actually built a facility where they can dispose of waste because they didn't have a facility like that. And the mayor of Pixley actually convenes meetings and engages so that communities can know that this is their facility. Meaning, when you do universal health coverage, you actually mobilize communities. They work with you. So the PIXLI model is the model that we would like to see happen in the rest of the country. So we have a report, a very detailed report. I think it's a good practice model for us. So those are the two ideas that we tried. But what we wanted to do, which is what we're still doing based on the report, we're trying to see what is it that is scalable. And we have appointed with the assistance of DFID funding, we're going to be appointing a consultant who use tools to scale up the lessons learned in PIXLI. So one idea that we have, Chair, and I'm hoping that will work, is whether, because at the moment we have stopped all awards. We used to have these annual awards of the best performing district, the best performing. We stopped them because they are not logical. If you look at what happens in our facilities and the awards, they don't talk to each other. So we decided we want to link the awards with innovations that are happening, as well as innovations that can be scaled up. So we want to see whether this PIXLI is such an approach, and we'd like, and maybe before the end of the year, we will be having those awards. And the difference with those is that we'll also include the facility. So we've used those two as innovative ideas, but we did not use the grant money for that because the grant money would not have been enough. And in any event, the grant money is spent at provincial level. So those are initiatives that we drove at national level, not in the provinces. We did this, driving this. So the FIT teams are still in place, but we'd like to scale up some of the ideas. So I wanted to share those two. The second part, Chair, with regard to the District Health Authority, we have had the Ministerial Advisory Committee on National Health Insurance. KZN has come up with a proposal of a district management office. If you read the Green Paper talks about the District Health Authority. We have actually looked at what the implications of the District Health Authority is. It's a fundamental reform, Chair. A fundamental reform, that means that, one, we might have to amend the Constitution, because essentially what you do, you give a district authority in such a way that the district manager or CEO will be the accounting officer. At the moment, your district manager serves as a postal office manager. They get letters from the province, they just pass them on. They have no authority whatsoever. So in a district, they just are doing basic administration of communicating this way and the other. And I want to use two examples to show you that it is not a workable model and it will not help our health reform. The first, Chair, is that we in PIXLI, for instance, when we went, it's not PIXLI, in CDBank. When the team went to CDBank, which is not an NHI pilot site, they started by looking at the problems in the facilities. There was no linen, no sheets, no pillowcases, no pajamas for patients. And they asked, but why? Where is the linen? They said, no, it's in the, we've locked it away. And they asked them, but why? They said, because you see, Gauteng has centralized laundry services. Now, every time we send our laundry, it doesn't come back. Either they send us back torn laundry, or we get laundry that's not ours at all, or it there are shortages. It's not enough. So we've decided we're going to keep it. But in essence, it means they're keeping it, yes, they can account for it in case they're audited. But the patients don't have linen in the facilities. They're solving one problem or creating another. So we said, okay, maybe the solution here is that we should perhaps buy you the big, heavy load laundry machines. Then you don't have to send them to the province if that's your concern. But in CDBank, what they did, they also came up then themselves with innovative ideas. If you look look at the model that Citibank used, they have improved most of their, a few of the, not all, but of the facilities. In Northern Cape, it was not a good one also. One facility did not have water supply for 3 years. And we asked them, but where do the nurses get, where do you get water from? So the nurses have to compete with the community to collect water from the water tanks on a regular basis. So, but we asked why the water pipe had burst. They wrote a letter to the district, and that's it, and they waited for the district. So I'm trying to show you that the quality of district management, if we're to implement NHI, and why we have to change the model, is not a good one. So we've assessed all district managers. In fact, Jeanette should have mentioned, we actually have a separate report that shows the quality of the district managers we have. So our proposal is that we need, in designing the district health authority, we need to change this management model. If service delivery happens at a district, people present in clinics and our district hospitals. So we've assessed all of them. We know what their quality is, and we have a report, and we can share that report with you. But it is going to require of us to change that model. It requires commitment from Parliament to say certain powers have to be removed from provinces and certain powers have to be given to the districts if service delivery is to happen. So we've done all of those. The only difference, Chair, and this is why we're sharing this report with you, is that some of these innovations and some of the work we did using support from development aid money and even our own budget at national level. And I thought I should share that with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. There's something that is still left. I think it's one slide on figures. We can do that one quickly. Honorable Kotkwane, you are welcome and thanks for your support. I know all the time we have helped you come. Thank you very much. You are welcome.
Thanks, Jay. Just to look at three slides. The first one is slide 23. Just to explain to you that if you look at this slide, you'll see that in the fourth quarter, expenditures has increased to 63 million. So in the fourth quarter, total spend on the ground was 63 million. And broken down by province in those numbers. The slide that Jeanette referred to was this one on DORA implementation. And all we try to do is show you here. Let me see if I can get it onto the slide. Okay. Oh, it doesn't. Yeah. Okay, I'll run it quickly. There it is. This one. So what we try to do here is to show the DORA implementation of the grant, showing what was the initial DORA allocation, coming to 150 million. What was the schedule for payment to each of the provinces? What was received by provinces? What was the actual expenditure by province, coming to 78 million for the financial year? We've transferred all the funds out to provinces. We did not keep any funds back. By the end of the fourth quarter, and expenditure by the end of that quarter was at 52%. The last column shows the request for rollovers that we've received about 2 weeks ago by the cutoff per province, and this was basically based on some commitments that provinces made up to the end of March. So some provinces, like Mpumalanga for instance, they would have an underspend of 5.9 million for instance, but the commitment is only at 325,000. This is what we've put forward to Treasury for consideration, and we'll have to see what the outcome of that is. So, Chair, this is as a summary, slide 25 again, showing that the total expenditure at 52%, Western Cape at 86% spent is the highest expenditure, and Gauteng at 25.6% is the lowest expenditure. So let me leave it at that one, Chair.
Maybe, Chair, if I were to talk about the commitments and the rollover, the minister had a report about the underperformance of the grant and convened a special, we had an NHC meeting to specifically discuss this. As you may be aware, the minister has gone from province to province addressing different formations about NHI, and including GPs. And one thing he raised with the MECs was that he would not like to see GPs go to facilities and not find an equipment working, or a GP go to a facility and there are no medicines, for instance. He said we cannot try to improve the capacity of the facilities by bringing in more doctors into our clinics, because we have evidence to show that our PAC utilization rates are low. They're low because people use hospitals. Now, to attract people back to clinics, people want to be seen by doctors. We say, okay, we'll put doctors in clinics. However, if you go to clinics, your machines don't work, there are no medicines, it's not going to help us in any way. So what we then did, we said, okay, we'll start with assessing what is the status in each facility, whether they've got supplies, whether they've got equipment, and so on. And if the teams that Mr. Vishal sent to every single facility, where we assess the level of readiness of the level of readiness of contracting the GP. So we also have in this report, I think it's the last slide on page Roman 7, where it says GP working in districts. So we've had ministerial roadshows. Minister started again. He did another round. And this round of the roadshows is busy with, he's talking directly to GPs to check with them, are you willing to come and so on? Can you sign up? So we've signed up with all the GPs, and we've got a list of all of those who want to be contracted. But we also wanted to match them to facilities that are ready. And we do have those facilities. But what we also are doing, Chair, we are installing information systems in all those facilities. We are doing this in partnership with Mindset, and they are linking this with our specialist teams, because our doctors must be supported by the specialist teams, the district specialist teams that are appointed. Now, in this report, we tell you which provinces have which specialists and which pilot district has. So we've appointed all these specialists. So there are only two provinces that have a full complement of the seven. The others have only three or four, so we could not attract them. And the most difficult has been Northern Cape. But all district pilot districts have family physicians. At least that one we could get. The most difficult specialist for us has been the anesthetist. But at least we have a full complement, including the nurses. Chair, I'm raising that because for the GP contracting, the contracts are ready. We have a model of contracting which is different to what we used to have for the current sessions, because the current sessional model does not take into account performance. And we've seen a lot of abuse, because what we've done, we've assessed every single session in every province. The way the sessions work, the GPs go into a facility. Sometimes they don't go. They just get their friends to go, but they still have a contract with the province. We have those reports. And our view is that it's poor management, because if something like that happens, it means the CEO does not know which GP has contract in that particular hospital. So all the problems that we see with doctors and GPs and so on, it's about poor management of facilities. So we've come up with the performance measures, and we've discussed them with the GPs on an ongoing basis. And we have now a total of about, I think, 300. We have 300 GPs ready to be contracted. And we've got a list of facilities that are ready for GPs to start. So that work has been done. I thought I should mention that.
Thank you very much, DG and the team members.
The last time it was 300, it's confirmed the exact number is 360.
360. Thank you very much, DG. Honourable members, time for questions, for clarities. Honourable Mashile, Honourable Dibier, and Honourable Joseph, and Honourable Montilli, in that order.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let us welcome the report that we have received, and also congratulate the DG for the huge work that has been put on the head, you know, is to look at health in the whole country. And I think it's a feather in our country for having produced people that can serve at that level. I think we must just applaud that, Chair. Chair, I think I've got a question for clarity, but also those that may need a little bit of a discussion. The model of the CUO in terms of revenue collection, this percentage, to hold this percentage, for what purpose? It's for the CEO as a person, as an incentive, or is for the CEO to have powers of utilizing that funds for the improvement of the facility that is managed? I just want to hear clarity on that percentage that we're talking about. But Chair, is I know the NHI actually is a socialist initiative, and the conditions under which we are operating in the country in the main is capitalistic in nature. And it raises quite a good number of issues, you know, that may pose as hurdles moving forward. And especially when it comes to procurement systems. Because that field is really problematic, and it is going to pose quite a lot of challenges moving forward, and it will need a lot of attention, I think, from the department, to an extent of actually even intervening in the procurement system for purposes of NHI. Because under the current systems, surely we are going to have big problems. You know, it's of price uncertainties and cost uncertainties almost year in, year out. Otherwise, then it is negotiations continuously. So I really just wanted to know is the kind of interventions in terms of the procurement systems as it has been outlined to be, on the supply chain, the being a general problem across. How are they going really to deal with that one? The other issue, Chair, is I think there is a query on limited delegations. And also I'm sure I've heard the DG talking to certain delegations to go down to a district level. But Chair, if what I've heard as findings at Charlotte Maxeke is anything that we can consider, you know, where you've got CEOs, you've got CFOs, you've got all sorts of managers in different directorates, but then you have got failing systems. How do you then give delegations to similar officials at a much, much lower level. And what did you expect to get? When people can't just simply deal with a file, just to ensure that the file is safe, secured, and it is clear that anybody can make sense out of a file when he gets the file, and then he's just lying on the steps. Now, at the district level, if you gave these delegations more delegated powers, what is that that you are going to get? Because currently they can't just do in the small little areas where they are working. I'm not saying, Chair, that the delegation must not be done. All what I'm just raising is the kind of people that you'll be giving the delegation. Will they do anything about it if with the minimal delegation that they are having of just simply, surely anybody that works in an office, they don't necessarily need to be told or to be given delegated powers just to secure the documents you work with in your office. But then you get in an office, you just can't get a book, you just can't get a receipt, you just can't get a copy of the order or a requisition they've made yesterday. So what I'm saying is that there is a lot to be done in skilling before you even think about giving additional authority in the person. But the other thing now is the kind of delegations to district. Like as I've said, it's, this NHI is a socialist intervention. And it must allow intervention by national. So the kind of delegation is that it must not hamper intervention by national if things are not working correctly. And it must not be delegations of this district authority that makes them to operate in or establishing small kingdoms where they actually bar everybody else from coming in from national or provinces, like what our municipalities are currently doing to national departments. And I think that is what I just wanted to try and raise. And bureaucratic processes that we're worrying about. But many of our public servants up to now, not all of them, of course, but many of them have shown tendencies that when you open up processes for people to take decisions quickly, they make a lot of mistakes, some of them unintentional, but some of them deliberate, to actually undermine the system or rob the system. So probably in KZN, I'm sure that's where it was raised, I think in KZN, maybe they are aware of these particular experiences, you know, where when you give reasonable powers to people, and then they end up even abusing it and do other things. And now, there's the balancing of efficiency and also of getting value for money. It's the balancing. How do you then do it? And so the information, the current information that the reports are based on, quality of the information that we are having. And also, I think we just need to ensure that we really get clean, appropriate, correct, relevant information. And because I'm sure even ourselves, I'm sure we have been marred by quite a lot of cut and paste and then some sucking information. I'm sure Edgar C. Shapshaw will produce relevant experiences where provinces just some fact figures when you actually need actual figures that people must just walk and get. Somebody just sit on the table and then and compute numbers and submit to national, and then and we believe that you are having genuine, authentic figures when you are not. I think these are some of the things that we just need to really verify. The last thing, Chair, is the issue of the health infrastructure grant in relation to those areas where you've got pilot projects for NHI. And it looks like I've not heard much on the report. And then how is it incorporated? We have heard about the, you said it's the US aid or something like that, the one that we have been using as a department. But this other grant that deals with the infrastructure of the health institutions, now how is it being coupled together with the NHI grant itself on these pilot areas? Thanks, Jefferson.
Pictchley region was the region that the NCP visited in taking Parliament to the people. That report was 80 seat. I would propose that the department take that report with them. It's available regarding the health issues in Pictchley to supplement what you have given us this morning. The factual position is the district manager, Mrs. Eckhart, is the acting district manager. And there are a few hiccups in that office. We know it because we were there. Yes. So it's impacting on your program there. The other thing, and that's the Treasury, is to release the funds at the beginning of the financial year because it was captured in the MEC's for finance budget tabling report in the provincial legislature, which I saw and I attended that session. The Treasury in the provinces, but specifically my province, are sometimes withholding the funding to be transferred. It also happens with the libraries grant. It's not sports, arts and culture today, but it is about the principle of releasing the money, that the job can be done. And lastly, Chair, another remark is the R Hospital will assist the rollout of this program when the hospital is completed. We saw it when we were there. It's along the National Road, a brand new hospital, and the availability of ambulances. Kumba bought 70 ambulances for the Northern Cape Department of Health. Some of them are still standing under a roof over there when they're unannounced. Yes. But we met on last Friday, 8 o'clock in the morning with the MEC, the HUD, Guguma, Tupan, and the different directors regarding this. Again, the principle of holding back. Why? While the people are crying outside to get the service. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I just wanted to clarify whether the department work with only the provincial health departments or whether this insurance, national health insurance plan also includes the local authorities in some of the pilot districts. I would like to know, I saw a point on a slide where this, I think Gauteng said there was no support. I don't know what support they're referring to, but there was, and of course the procurement issues there. I would like to know if all the facilities are online in terms of this. You spoke about one area about the students and the computers and so on. So I would like to know if all the other areas are having similar problems or if they're all online in terms of a computerized system. So, Chair, I think I wanted to also know is the capacity that's been raised there, the challenge, is it HR capacity or is it professional capacity? The nurses, the doctors, as I said, there's a capacity problem. And I think I want to know what is the key problems with supply chain management, because this is a pilot program, and one understand there will be challenges. I'd like also to know what is the time frame of this pilot program, because if we do not address this, it will be no different than all the other reports I've received here since I joined this committee. All got the same problems. So somewhere we've got a draw line that we, if we start something new after the pilot project, it must be, we must try to get a perfect model. Otherwise, we just continue the same as the rest of all the other departments that we are all struggling with. And I also wanted to know, there was a slide where it says there's no master plan. Now, a master plan is the national plan. So a province can't be without a master plan. It may not have a business plan, in my understanding, but it must have a master plan if the master plan is a national plan. Then there was the consultants that you referred to. I think we've also tried to talk about reducing consultants and try to have our own capacity, because we already have a health department and we try to introduce this insurance plan with maybe the same staff or with additional staff. But if we're going to use consultants, it must be for a time frame, a specific reference as to what they need to do, that it doesn't become ongoing and the cost is not escalated. Most of the money goes there. My last point, Honourable Chair, is this statement you made about the new management model that you want within the District Health Authority. But you made reference to the fact that we may have to change the constitution. I just need some clarity on that. I think I would support a new health structure in addition to the current structures that would deal with this specific pilot program. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Chair, no, I want to welcome the report. If NHI is a socialist program, then it's so welcome. Because America apparently is also coming up with its own national health scheme. So if they copied it from the East, well, it seems like all roads are leading to the East. My questions, Chairperson, on the presentation that we received from the DG on Charlotte Macleck and all the good initiatives that the ministry has done there. I come from Gauteng, by the way, so my interest would be more biased towards questions to the Gauteng province. It's whether the current rate of revenue collection currently at Charlotte Macleck has improved or is it still consistent. I'm bearing in mind the fact that you have also conducted the study in Tixlikasen, but for now the initiatives that have been done in Charlotte Macleck. And then two, Chairperson, the DG has alluded also to the problem of the costing of the cables. Now, one cost is 10, the other one is 40 million. Now, I just want to find out from the DG if this issue of cabling has been resolved. And if not, what are the hiccups? Some of them, I suppose, DG would be work for oversight. And then, three, the DG has indicated that there are 360 doctors who are available and ready to be deployed in hospitals. Now, these would be hospitals which are ready to receive them in terms of them being resourced and them having the necessary equipment. Now, I would like to know, with respect to Gauteng, which hospitals are not ready or clinics are not ready to receive such assistance from the doctors. Now, Sidi Beng, and the contribution that your department has made, with respect to their new responsibility now of ensuring that they keep and they treat their own laundry, is there advice the department can give to provinces with respect to the treatment of laundry? Whether the district could be able, when capacitated, to deal with this particular issue, and whether Sidi Beng in particular is doing quite well in the treatment of their own laundry. And then, indulge me, DG. The national teams that you have sent across the country, with the research done in Pixligasen. Now, I want to understand the partnership that has emerged with the private sector as to what aspect, what role, if you could be able to define to us the role of the private sector in that instance. And then the district health authority. Now, I understand that this could be something that could be considered and something that can be probably taken over by Parliament if indeed this is how things have to turn about. But my question is whether the personnel that is at the district, whether it could be competent enough to deal with all the issues that the province is currently dealing with, most in particular around the issue of health and HNI. And then what are the chances for the retainment of that personnel, you know? Now, my last question, Chairperson, is just around the provincial spikes that we saw in the graphs on spendings. Whether the department has been able to monitor and do a proper review of such spending pattern, and what is it that the department has captured from this type of spending? Because our fear would be money is being dumped, but it could be the alternative that they are waking up because the gates are just about to close. So just the observation that the department has done on that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. If I would to start with our Honourable Member regarding the questions that were raised about the quality of the CEOs. Chair, if you recall, this is one particular area that we started with. As health. We commissioned a DBSA to assess every single CEO of a hospital in the public sector. Got the results of the assessment, and our view was that there were problems. We picked up problems. On the basis of that, we also looked at the provisions in the National Health Act. Now, the National Health Act provides for the designation of hospitals, meaning we need to describe the hospital and say this is a central hospital, but also say what type of CEO must manage a central hospital. Equally, a regional hospital, a tertiary hospital, and a district. So we went through that process of categorizing the hospitals, but also defining the kind of skills of CEOs that need to run these hospitals. But we didn't stop there, Chair. We also recently established an academy because we picked up that there were problems with the capacity of the CEOs. So our academy is designed specifically to train people in running hospitals. Now, we don't have programs. Now, if you look at the programs in the country, they're about general management of hospitals. They train people to be health managers. We could be a health manager sitting in an administrative office at national level. It doesn't necessarily prepare people to run a hospital. To run a hospital and to be a manager in a provincial office are two different things. So the academy is specifically to make sure that people are trained for that. Chair, I want to share this, and I don't want to take long, but it's a necessary experience. What we then did when we got the outcome of the assessment, we designated, but we then went back and checked whether the CEOs met the regulations, the provisions of the guidelines and the regulations. And we decided to advertise the posts of CEOs. And we made the CEOs to apply. Chair, when we received, there were about 2,500 to 3,000 applications that we got. And I want to give you the profile of the applicants because it's an important thing that I think we need to deal with. Most people who applied have master's degrees. They've got MBAs. Masters in public administration, masters in public health, PhDs. Some even have double degrees, masters in public health and MBA. But what we picked up when I reviewed the CVs, they have those postgraduate qualifications, multiple of them, good, CVs look good. But a person has been doing the same job over 12 years, nothing else, same job over 12 years. And qualifications. So what is missing, which I think is a very important thing that we need to invest in, and I think this is what we've brought to the attention of the academy, is that people need to do on-site training. And this is what is missing. They need, so we said we want them to be trained on how to run a hospital in the hospital so that we can solve those problems in the hospital. So this is what we have asked the academy to do, and I think they appreciate that. Chair, we are mindful of the fact that it's an investment that is necessary, and we would like to do that. So I thought I should refer to that investment that we've started, and we're working in partnership with different institutions. We've got a heads of departments from Harvard, because as you know, Chair, South Africans love getting into an aeroplane, going to Harvard to do executive leadership. We told them, no one goes to Harvard for executive leadership, you come here. You'll form part of our team, you train them in South Africa. We did the same thing, experts from the UK, we say nobody goes to UK, you come here, we'll train them, because we have to train them in our hospitals. They don't need to get into an aeroplane and go anywhere. So that's the model we have brought. So in our training, in our advisory committee, we've got experts from Harvard, Italy, and the UK. Now, if they want UK, you know, Italy experience, we brought it here. So we've got them right in the country. So that's the nature of the academy. So, Chair, I wanted to talk about the socialist nature and just clarify this one, Chair. You know, perhaps maybe that's how I should have prefaced my talk. In December 2012, the United Nations General Assembly passed a resolution on universal health coverage. Now, universal health coverage is like NHI for different countries. They call it different things. In the U.S., it's called Obamacare. Here we call it NHI. In Thailand, they called it 30 baht scheme. So it's called different things in different countries. In this resolution, 93 countries sponsored the resolution. I would like to indulge the parliamentary researchers to say, if you go to the UN resolution, you'll see a total of 93 countries sponsored this resolution. It's a groundbreaking decision globally, where you have both developed and developing countries, including the U.S., as a sponsor of this resolution. So I think there's a realization, Chair, globally, that if really we are to change health, we have to change the way health is financed and the way services are delivered, and we need to mesh the two. But we also have to look at governance, and governance not only of the financing bodies, but also of the service delivery institutions. This is the configuration that we need to get right in South Africa. And I'm grateful, Chair, that it's something that all of us are geared towards. Chair, the second thing I wanted to raise is that as I was invited by the World Bank, they have shared with me 21 case studies of countries that are making progress. And it's interesting, others have gone this route for 30 years, some 5 years, some have just started. We are the new kid on the block, I must confess. And it would be useful, and I'm willing to share the case studies with you, the 21, including Treasury, I think, so that we can see from these 21 case studies what has worked, what has not worked, what would be good for South Africa, what mistakes we should avoid. Because there are certain things that we can learn from and that we can do and that we can do well. So I would like to address that. Honourable Member raised the question of delegation. I think it's an important thing. There are about five publications, I think three publications, which I have read, Chair, published both jointly by the International Hospital Federation in partnership with the World Bank. So in these publications, they actually outlined five approaches that countries have followed in the manner in which hospitals are run. They say you can choose to privatize a hospital, which may not be an option for us because it would be too expensive. They say you can do corporatization. They say you can look at an option of independence and autonomy. And what is good, Chair, is that they differentiate between independence and autonomy because they say conceptually the two are not the same. And then they have the last model as delegation. And we were saying, Chair, I know that there's been debates about the central hospitals. We view the central hospitals as centers of excellence. Now, centers of excellence, we've got four in Gauteng, two in Western Cape, one in Free State, two in KZN, and one in Eastern Cape. Now, you can see that they're not in all provinces. But South Africans must access those services. So the question is, how do you do it? And it's that model that we have to establish, whereby our centers of excellence must not be used to treat a common cold. They must be for high-tech kind of services that we need, and they must be used as a reference for the country so that we say these are institutions where we do high-tech stuff, where we train our specialists, where we train our health workers. So those are models that you suggest. But for your tertiary hospitals as well as your regional hospitals, this is where the delegation model should work. But as to how you delegate, it's going to be important because what we've seen, Chair, in some of the hospitals, the delegations were taken away. A CEO could not even buy a globe. For instance, globes are finished in the parking lot and it's dark. They can't buy globes. So we say there are certain delegations that you can give them. So the question is, you can give them delegations and they use the existing budget. But the incentive that we would like to engage in, and we want Treasury to guide us because we're not experts in the field. Treasury must tell us, how do you build incentives in such a way that it encourages people to collect revenue, meaning they do it with enthusiasm. They don't just do it as by the way, because in Charlotte Matlack, I mean, you know, there was no enthusiasm whatsoever in collection of revenue. So I think we need to probably sit with Treasury and look at how do we enthuse this enthusiasm of collecting revenue, because it's important. We've lost quite a lot, because for medical aid, for instance, it prescribes if we don't collect over a certain period. So all this money that we didn't collect, we won't be able to recover. So we probably have to look at how best we can do this. Chair, I agree that it's a question of balancing efficiency and getting value for money. And it's that balance that we'd like to achieve. I agree with the honorable member, including quality of information. You see, to address this and the procurement, we did an exercise. We said when the minister took a decision that the grant was underperforming, he said, I want you to get the facilities ready, the clinics, honorable chair, ready as part of NHI pilot. He said, I want to ensure that every facility has equipment. So we went back, looked at what DORA says. We also looked at whether was it possible within DORA, after the framework had been published, what would we rely on? And I think there were provisions within which we could rely on. But we then asked the provinces to go ahead and procure, Chair. Said, send us the list, let's see what we've procured. Prepared a spreadsheet. When we looked at the spreadsheet, you could sit and say, yes, we believe you. We said, that's not enough to just sit at national with a spreadsheet. This is how we engaged St. John Foundation. They sent young South Africans to go from facility to facility to say, we want to verify this list that you gave us. It was quite intense, but it was necessary. So these days, Chair, we don't do that anymore. We don't just rely on a report. We send people to facilities to check whether things are true or not. And I think we want to build that trust because it's important. Procurement, Chair, I think if you centrally procure, maybe it's a different thing of putting it, to achieve economies of scale. But the people who actually buy must be in facilities. They must be taught how to buy, how to monitor their stock levels, how to ensure that they work within budget. Those things must still happen at a local level. But as to achieving economies of scale by negotiating prices, as you've seen, Chair, we've managed to achieve reduced prices for ARVs. I guess we can do it for others, but it's an important area that we need to explore further. Chair, about pigs liquor semi, our hearts are very sore, I must say. We've raised this with the MEC and the HOD. Because, you see, we had such a motivated team. They were moving things. And overnight, they decided to change the district manager. Not only do they do that, they take a very junior person to now take over and run the district. And we're asking, but why do this in a district that is functioning, that we want to use as a model? Now, we have to go back again and ask those questions. Why is this happening? And it's a general problem, actually, Chair, as to why do we interfere with things that work very well and change them midstream when service delivery is improving and we can show that? So we recognize that, and Chair, we agree. On the ambulances, we want to go back. We actually have a review team that the minister has established, but also regulations about emergency services, ambulances, now we are going to regulate so that every province complies. Now, they cannot say they cannot comply, so but the Kumba one would like to go, if you allow us, and ensure that these can be released for service delivery, if possible. Yes, we'd like to also go. We'd like to also go back, Chair. With regard to the local authority, the only district that had necessarily engaged local authority in terms of the grant is the district. But with regard to the consultations, the minister has consulted every single local government, not only the mayor, but the whole team. He's been going from district to district addressing all of them, explaining to them what NHI is and so on. I think the next step is to also discuss with them the model. When we were discussing the district health authority initially, on the National Health Council, we have SALGA and COGTA as members. SALGA is a member of the National Health Council. COGTA participates as a observer. And we have started that process with them. And perhaps the next step is to then go back and discuss specifically the model, because to discuss the district health authority, we still don't have answers. I mean, I made this bold statement about the constitution. I also don't know. I don't know whether we can just change the National Health Act and that this would be adequate, or whether this would require the constitutional changes. I'm not sure. And I also do not know whether the model should be such that you use local government as your district health authority. Now, the risk there is that with the local government and its challenges at the moment, do you want to put this responsibility there? Or do you still want to retain the district health authority as part of health? And do you we need a much broader discussion, because it's a fundamental reform issue that needs to be addressed. Honourable members, with regard to the whether all facilities the capacities whether they are professional or not, with regard to the professional in the report, what we've done, Chair, there's a tool called Wisen tool. It assesses the workload in the facilities, but we also establish whether do we have enough people relevant to the functions that have to be performed, and also with the burden of disease in the catchment population. So it takes into account different factors. So we've assessed every single facility in the pilot district using the Wisen tool. But what we want to do with it, because this is what Treasurer has always been critical about, and we've taken the criticism from Treasurer, that our budgeting approach is flawed because we don't have norms and standards for personnel. You see, your ratio of how many doctors you need in a clinic relative to nurses, relative to the population and other professionals. So we've done that exercise. Now, for purposes of budgeting, for purposes of service delivery and any other reason, we now have a norm. But we want to write that norm as a regulation, because what we've seen, Chair, is that you may find in one facility you've got more doctors, more nurses, and another facility does not have enough personnel. And there's no objective approach of allocating. So we say the allocation, if we say you are a district hospital, this is the norm. If you are a clinic of this size, this is the norm. So that for every facility on an ongoing basis, we can check whether that norm is complied with. So the report will be released soon. We had hiccups because we're using, again, the HR unemployed graduates. We no longer call them unemployed graduates because they are now on contract. We've kept them for 2 years. They are rolling out the Wisen tool because no province must have an excuse why they cannot comply with them more. No, because we've given them extra hands to do this work. Chair, the time frame for the pilot. We said we'll do the pilot for the first year to learn these things, but the idea was that for the second year, according to what is in the green paper, we wanted to scale up to 20 pilot districts. But we realized that, you know, because if you read the report, there are still some areas that are red. So to scale up when we still have some areas where we've not made progress would not be a good idea, especially because we had not seen how the contracting model with the GPs worked. So we wanted to do this, but then when we scale up, we don't scale up to 20, but we scale up to 52 districts, because the model would have understood whether certain things are scalable or not. I think that That is sort of the way we would like to do it, Chair. But in between, we want to use that to provide training. So the pilot will surely end, but we scale up to 52. Though this is will be the second round of the pilot and the second phase where we do GP contracting. About the master plan, I'm not sure about the master plan because we have the green paper, which has now been converted into a draft red paper, which must come to to cabinet, and we have an amendment bill that brings into force certain elements, and we also have an implementation plan, which is quite detailed. So the master plan is that grand implementation plan, but this one is just a small pilot to see whether certain things are scalable or not. But because the Minister of Finance is the chair of the interministerial committee that deals with NHI, we must first have that discussion about the white paper, the implementation plan, and the amendment bill. And hopefully that meeting will be taking place soon. Chair, the consultants, the only consultants we used was for the assessment because we didn't want to review ourselves. We wanted an independent assessment. So DFID appointed independent providers because even with our HR strategy, we say independently people must assess us and tell whether we're on the right track or not. If we do it ourselves, I think they will be subjective, I must say. I must confess, I'll write a nice story about myself that we're doing well. That's why here you'll see that we've been very objective about how we've been reflected. We have not even tampered with this report. We left it as it is and said, let us be judged on what is happening and improve on those areas where we think there are weaknesses. The new model for district health authority, like I said, Chair, I don't even know that we will need to change the constitution. Some have said we might need to. Others have said maybe it will be enough to change the National Health Act. It may just be enough. Now, the National Health Act makes reference to District Health Council. But District Health Council and District Health Authority are two different things. They are not the same. So in the ministerial committee report, they are saying we must actually have a district management office. Now, these are three concepts that we need to clarify. But I think very soon we'll have clarified this. Indeed, the USA is one of the countries, like I said, that has sponsored the resolution. And the debates at the moment, Chair, which may be of interest to you, there are debates about what should, you know, we have the Millennium Development Goal, the MDGs. In 2015, we have to report as a country. And there are debates at the moment as to whether post-MDG agenda must just be on universal health coverage. Others have said, but yes, it's one thing we should consider. So it's something that it's sort of been discussed across the whole world, both developed and developing countries. They want universal health coverage as the agenda for post-MDGs. Chair, for Charlotte Matsaike, I'm going to ask Ian van der Merwe because he is assigned specifically to look at Charlotte Matsaike. He's in the team that is working in Charlotte Matsaike. With regard to the doctors that have been appointed, Chair, can I just mention that the doctors that have been appointed, that will be appointed, in fact, who have been given contracts to consider, they are supposed to work in clinics, not hospitals. And in Gauteng, it will be in Tshwane. Ne? You have the number for Tshwane?
Not
yeah, for Tshwane, not yet. But for Tshwane, we've been engaging SAMA because SAMA wanted to be the one coordinating. And we're arguing that we don't want to enter into relationships with doctors through their associations. We've met with Summer. We want individual doctors so that we can measure their individual performance. You see, if you do it through associations, now we must report via SAMA. We say so we've been having meetings with them. But what I would like to say, Chair, in Gauteng, what we've done, and now you see I'm disclosing a lot, and I'm sorry I have to do this. We, because from the audit, we realized that there are certain things that do not require major infrastructure improvements, like a bath pipe in Northern Cape, a drainage, because in some facilities it was a block drain. You know, small things, or a collapsing ceiling in one district, for instance. We asked them, look, this ceiling that is dropping, why don't you fix it? No, we're waiting for public works. We said no. So one colleague took some screw drivers and asked them to bring the step ladders, and then he started fixing. So what we do, some bring pliers and so on. So we're teaching them to say, some things you can solve. You don't have to wait for public works, for province, for national. So it's just solving problems. So we then suggested, a Chair, that we're going to enter into a relationship with the FETs. We've signed an agreement with the FET. What they're going to do, they're going to release the people who are in their final year, who are doing plumbing and artisans. So they we've just started in three facilities in Tswane. Ne? Yeah, so they are going in there fixing things. Now, it's not rocket science. It's simple things that we'd like to do. And we've got three facilities. We could show you photos. They just do them over a short period. And we're adding additional space using park homes and so on. So that work is underway. With regard to infrastructure, one member said we didn't report. Actually, there is a report here about what we've done regarding minor improvements and so on. We've reported on each one. There's one grant, though, Chair, that has also been underperforming, and that is the nursing grant. It's also a bit of a concern to us. But we're in a discussion with the provinces. With regard to CDBang, I must say the CDBang team has also used very interesting tools to improve their facilities. And I must confess, in Gauteng, the problem has been lack of provincial support. Even with the supply chain, the problem of supply chain that you see everywhere. What we picked up, Chair, was that the district ordered equipment that they needed, but their orders were not processed. And we then wrote letters to say, but why are the orders not processed? Like the HOD will say, oh, I'm not aware, or the CFO will. I mean, there'll be one excuse after the other. So we've put that thing of supply chain on the agenda. In KZN, it was a different problem. We asked the HOD, but why have you not approved the supply? Because they had placed orders. She said, no, there was no way I could have approved it because they bought iPads and computers, and they saw this as spare money, and she didn't approve. And we recognized that. So in every instance, we have reasons of each problem with the supply chain. Either the districts saw this as spare money to go and on a shopping spree. In others, it was a genuine concern where the province was not supportive. And I would like us to look, because we do have a report of every single HOD coming back to us to say, oh, I was not aware, oh, this was a delay. So we've got that. But we also set up a team that is led by the CFO and Mr. Moremi. What they do, they go from province to province, and they meet the teams, and they discuss the grant, they look at the problem. So we have a detailed report per district as to what the problems are. So the partnership with the private sector, the PIPSI experience, Ms. Volmaran, you want to share the experience, I think the NetBank experience. I think it's NetBank. when I say private sector, it's actually NetBank. You want to share that experience?
In terms of the facility improvement team that's working in Pixikasemi district, we visited a number of facilities to look at some innovations. And specifically in Hopetown Clinic, we found that they had a problem, for an example, with records management and filing space. And then they went into a partnership with NetBank, who then assisted by giving them space in terms of a clean record room and so forth. And they also assisted them with developing facilities in terms of waste management. And also then we went into partnership with another business in Hopetown to assist them with additional Zozo water tanks so that they can have continuous water supply. Yeah, and then what they also do is they're using the private businesses in the towns to assist them to develop their facilities to comply with the quality improvement plan specifically, and they work in partnership with that. They also, in terms of local authority, in the majority of the municipalities in Pixikasemi district, they have now formed like a health forum where they meet on a regular basis to address health and social problems collectively in an integrated manner. And we see that as a model that can be used in other districts as well.
The last question was about the spikes in spending and the review of spending and the dumping. CFO?
Jay, thank you. Let me just touch on the issue of the revenue collection. As DG has said, the idea was also to improve the claims that we make to the Road Accident Fund as well as to medical aids. And what we found was that there was, in the past, quite a number of duplicate claims that were made to these institutions. So the one idea was to then obviously improve the claims and the legitimacy of those claims. The claims rate has actually improved quite a bit. You know, it varies between months to month, but we see that there's claim rate improvements of between 2 and 6 million per month, which obviously gives you the potential for an increased revenue collection. The issue of the March spike, I think we're all aware of it and trying to manage it. In this case, the grant, obviously with the intervention after the National Health Council, we put a lot of emphasis on the purchase of equipment. And we found that the uptake was initially slow in the second quarter, and picked up quite considerably in the last quarter. And that's where you find that many provinces, like KZN, for instance, actually spent quite a bit of money in the last quarter, basically on the equipment and on the amended business plan as approved by the National Health Council. But I think, in principle, the issue of a March spike, I think we all understand the difficulties and the risks associated with that, and we probably manage it. But better given the current business plan arrangements.
Thank you. Any follow-up questions, honourable members? If none, we're going to take Joseph.
Yeah, thank you. I've heard a comment about the health committees. Oh, I would like to know the important role of the health committees and the hospital boards, you know, where those roles, if they function in all the pilot areas, is that committees and hospital board functioning, and are they playing an active role?
On page 25, on provincial expenditures, what are the reasons given by Gauteng for their lack of expenditure here? Yeah, there is poor expenditure of 25.6%. What are the reasons given by them?
Okay. So just one other thing. What is the position of the department with regard to, nurses that have been furthering their studies and now they've got interest in enrolling further to become doctors? Do they have to resign from their positions, or is there anywhere how you handle it? I'm asking this because I've come across some of the nurses in your clinics and hospitals saying, I've been studying, but I want to now become a doctor, but I'm afraid I'll have to lose my job for 3 years that I'll be at university. Also. But I couldn't give a clear answer as to what is the position of the department, if you can enlighten us on that.
Chair, for the first question, I'm going to ask Jeanette Hunter to respond about, particularly for the health committees. With regard to the hospital boards, they actually vary. There are some hospitals that have functional hospital boards, but we want to review the hospital boards, particularly with regard to composition. But we also want the academy to run some induction programs, because in some hospital boards, if you allow me, Chair, some people think that their role is to interfere with others. They think their role is to decide on the tenders. So we want to come up with a model where we have clear terms of reference, we outline the composition, and we also, especially for the hospitals, and we'd like to publish that as a regulation. At the moment, the minister only has authority with regard to the hospital boards for central hospitals only. But we want to see whether we can give guidance for other levels of care. But Jeanette will respond to the health committees.
Thank you, Chair. For the clinic committees, it's similar to the board. Hospital boards in some provinces and differs from district to district, even from facility to facility. They are functioning, and in others they are not functioning. There's training programs. Some provinces have designed training programs, and the clinic committees have undergone training programs. But when DG was talking about the importance of training hospital CEOs on site, the same bears to mind. I was fortunate enough to accompany the minister and the deputy minister on rounds in the provinces to facilities. And why I say fortunate, when we go and meet with officials. But when we go as part of the team with the minister and the deputy minister, they also invite the local politicians to come along on these visits to the clinics. And I think it then also helped to point out practically to clinic committees what their roles are. For example, when we got to a clinic where there was no safe water supply, and the members of the mayoral council, and especially the MMC responsible for health was there, and the deputy minister could ask, but sir, what have you done to help them with this problem? Have you written a letter, or have you overseen that the facility manager writes a letter that you can sign to the MEC at the province? It also helps to point out those practicalities so people can understand their roles clearly. So, Chair, in short, it's also still a process where some are functioning, but others are not functioning, and we need to improve that all the time.
Chair, just briefly on the Gauteng issues. They've raised three basic ones: the support from provincial office, the hurdles in procurement processes, and unfortunately, we only got involved with this one a little bit late in terms of the existing contracts that are there for equipment. So in some cases, they needed new contracts because those contracts have expired. The third one is also an administrative one where the province did not, on the budget codes applicable to the grant, allocate the proper budgets. We also addressed that one. And the other issue was that because the province had some pressure on the total compensation of employees, that they could not employ any staff on the NHI grant. So although they made provision on the grant to employ some staff, they couldn't do it because the entire line item for compensation was overspent. So that's basically the major reasons for the Gauteng under expenditure. But nothing, you know, what the raised challenges, I think, can easily be addressed to some extent.
If I can respond to your other question about the nurses. Normally, if people want to pursue a different profession, most of the skills development fund and the bursaries, because there are bursaries that can be provided for the nurses, But normally what happens is that the officials, if the post is kept, they are put on sabbatical. And they normally go on unpaid leave so that we can use that to be able to recruit. Because for post to be vacant for 3 years, it will affect a service delivery negatively. So there are two options. Is that they get a bursaries and they go on sabbatical. But that is the decision of an HOD of a particular province. Chair, I just wanted to say that the one particular matter I wanted to bring to the attention of members, which was discussed in a different parliamentary committee with Treasury present, was that in Free State, actually, there was a peculiar problem in that the treasurer, provincial treasurer, withheld grant money across board for Revite, for HIG, and we tried to establish what the problem was. Apparently, they had a serious budget pressures, and cash flow problems, and it was a matter of concern. But we then asked a parliamentary committee, the chair then asked Mr. Andrew Donaldson to intervene. So what he then did, I think he went to speak to them in the province, and they could only release the money towards the end of March. So our problem is that it's not even the spike, because the province would not be able, they were not able to spend the money because Treasury kept it. And it's something that you probably have to investigate, because I wasn't sure what the reasons were. And maybe we probably have to sit with Treasury and look at how we work with provincial Treasury so that they can also be supportive.
Just a short one. Next Wednesday is the 12th of June. We're meeting Provincial Treasury of Free State. We will take this thing to that meeting, this issue. Now it comes to my mind, when we engage with the Provincial Treasury, they are funding municipalities to a certain amount of money to get them that they are in the black and not in the red. But we're dealing with Free State Treasury next week, Wednesday. Members are just there and not here, that you remember. Mr. Shishi, will you be here? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Shishi, any comments from Treasury? I know that in terms of other things you have been covered, but the space is yours now. Thanks. Sorry.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I think, yes, a lot of things have been covered, so it wouldn't be necessary for me to go through things in detail. I think certainly in terms of slides number 4 and 5, as you can see, the numbers are the same as with the National Department, so there's not much need to speak to that, and I think there's been quite a number of questions and comments around the March spike, which is clear from both presentations. I think just a couple of comments on the issues, because DG spoke extensively about the points that we made on the first, or rather the second slide, slide 2, which talks to the purpose and the key outputs of the grant. So I'm not going to, people can read for themselves, I'm not going to regurgitate it, but except to say that I think what has happened is that the scenario that we've seen is that it's sort of very much like something like building a very beautiful motor car and then taking the body of a beautiful motor car and putting it on top of a dysfunctional mechanical chassis. In other words, part of the problem is that the historical neglect of administrative functions such as finance, HR, and logistics in health has had a significant impact. So that when you introduce a program such as this, it sits on top of a chassis of a system that has these kinds of dysfunctions. And I think that is one of the big takeaway points. And Minister Manuel made a point recently at launching the NDP that you have to fix the engine room before you can provide quality services. And one of the things that I just want to highlight is that if you look at HR and health, since 2008, our analysis shows that there have been more than 45,000 additional staff added to the health sector in provinces. And that's more than any other sector across the board. And two questions arise from this. The one is, have these massive appointments been in strategic areas of service delivery? And secondly, following on from that, is has this resulted in improved service delivery? And I think when you look at and you juxtapose that against the correct statements by the National Department that there are significant gaps in capacity and in staffing in specific strategic areas in the health sector, in the primary healthcare facilities, and some of these districts that have been uncovered by this program, you can see that what it reveals is the fact that apart from the fact that there is a need for additional resources in some areas, a problem which I believe is an even bigger problem is the problem of dead wood in the system, where you do have a lot of people, but those people are not adding the value that you need. And I think from that we welcome the commitment and the statement by the Health Department on norms and standards for HR, because we have been harping on about it for quite a number of years, because some of us have also visited health facilities. I was in Barra some time ago and walked into the finance manager's office in one of the largest hospitals in the world, the largest hospital in the Southern Hemisphere. Finance manager sitting behind his desk, and all around him there are boxes. And I say to him, what are these boxes? And he says, it's invoices. Unpaid invoices, sitting in boxes, not being processed, not being managed, suppliers not paid, et cetera, for everything from food to various critical services. So these are the kinds of administrative issues that we see in health. They're very unglamorous issues, very boring things. It's about opening the bonnet of the car and looking underneath at things that maybe are difficult to understand and are very mundane. But they have such a major impact on the operation of the system that we need to to resolve them. And so we want to welcome the statements from the National Department. I do want to say that one of the things that we found in the assistance in Gauteng, for instance, was the questions that were raised were being part of the task team there together with the National Department was in certain areas, particularly where you've got, as Honorable Matsisi was saying, coming from Gauteng, where you've got some of these large hospital facilities, it's very, very, very critical. It cannot be overemphasized. It's very, very critical that you have specialist skills in things like logistics, in things like supply chain, these kinds of things, and operations, because if you don't have those kinds of skills and you end up with too many generalists in the system, then you end up with administrative breakdowns and situations like we found, for instance, in one hospital. I think it was Mamelodi Hospital where we visited, where people say, the taps are broken in the toilet. And then you say, well, why don't you get the taps fixed? And they say exactly that. No, we're waiting for public works. We've been waiting for 3 weeks or whatever it is. I mean, this kind of thing, that the way people behave, a lot of it needs to be addressed and changed, as well as an infrastructure, as well as another issue, facilities management. I mean, we have found that at best so far, we've found three people across the nine provinces who are actually what we would consider top-notch infrastructure health facilities managers. In the rest of the provinces, the people who are running the health facilities and infrastructure are quite unsatisfactory. Now, I'm not a health infrastructure expert, but when I go to Cecilia Makiwane and the consultants and the contractors are the people telling the health facilities manager what's going on, and he doesn't know, it tells you that there is a problem. So again, it comes back to this issue of norms and standards for not just for the number of people, but also for the types of skills that are required. And we need to go beyond the CEOs. We need to also deal with the skills of other types of requirements in the health sector. Honorable Chair, just to answer a couple of issues that have been raised that I think are important. There was an issue raised, firstly, on by the DG on the incentives for revenue collection. We have been looking at this issue for a number of years. What we found is the best incentive for revenue collection, because we did a pilot study on this with the Western Cape Provincial Treasury. We did some work at Tigerberg Hospital and Karl Bremer. We found that the best incentive is basically revenue retention. If you can say to somebody the revenue that you collect you can keep to do the things that you need in your facility, that tends to act as the best incentive for collecting revenue. The problem with it is that what it does is that as soon as you start doing it, it cuts out the potential for redistributing across areas that need it. And by that I mean, if you've got a hospital or a facility which is in a relatively affluent urban area and therefore can potentially collect a lot more revenue where it is, and they get to keep that revenue, the place that's sitting somewhere in an area where it's more difficult because of the poverty level, then it becomes difficult to... But obviously that's something that one would have to find a way of addressing through the fiscus. But we are working on that because there is some potential for saying to hospitals, look, collect revenue. You can either keep that revenue or we can find a way of focusing the revenue that you have collected to the needs that you have in your hospital. But we have to find a way of balancing that with the redistributive requirements across the different kinds of areas where hospitals tend to reside. On the issue of the withholding of funds by provincial treasuries, when we inquired about this, and I spoke to Mr. Donaldson because he brought the issue to myself as a person responsible for provincial budget, and we inquired with the provincial treasury, and of course we will deal with, we will get it from the horse's mouth next week. One of the things that has happened in a couple of provinces, and no worse than in the two, Free State and Northern Cape, is that there's been a muddling of things that have happened in those provinces, particularly as it comes to health. I mean, if you look at Free State as an example, as I'll present next week in my own presentation, Free State ended up, during the course of 2012-13, with the lowest cash reserves of any province in the country. There was just this incredible depletion of resources that at the time, and I can't remember if Honorable De Beer was there when I presented to the Budget Council in 7 February, Free State had actually gone into a slight deficit on their cash reserves. They'd gone into a minus 8 million or something like that, a small amount in the context of, you know, a sort of 45 billion budget. But they were in a very, very precarious cash position, and this had an impact on the way cash was being released in departments. And I have to say that one of the culprits in depleting resources was the health department itself. The provincial health department was overspending, and there was all these kinds of problems. And to some extent in Northern Cape as well, they had these things. So we have to find a way, and I agree with the DG, we've got to work with the provincial treasurers to find a way of trying to separate out these issues so that the money that's meant for certain things, that's ring-fenced for certain things, still goes to those things, while on the other hand, we don't, you know, bust the bank, as it were, when it comes to the actual provincial reserves. But I can confirm that we did follow up on that issue, and it did have quite a lot to do with the cash problem that encroached on the provincial fiscus during the last quarter of the financial year. Chair, with your permission, I think you will accept that there's no need for me to go through any of the other slides, and so I'll end there. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments, Mr. Sisha, and thank you very much, DG, for the presentation. At least it has clarified some of the concerns we had on the spending patterns on this particular grant, and we'll keep on monitoring others. We're now going to move to the next item of just to adopt the minutes. Just before you leave, DG and your team, I've noted that the department still have to give us an update report on the investigations that were being conducted in Northwest and Northern Cape. So in the light of time, and perhaps not to delay the matter further, because we are pressed up with how we schedule our meetings, I would suggest that you send us a written report, and then if after members have gone through it, we find it necessary to convene a meeting, then we'll do that. But if we are satisfied with the report, there would not be a need for a meeting. Otherwise, it will take us until next year waiting for that. So I suggest we just get a written report on those two. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Much, DG, and you are list. And thank you very much, Mr. Sitche and the Ghosts. And our members will now quickly deal with the minutes. The few minutes that we have, 6 sets of minutes, I'll quickly go through them. First set being the minutes of the 24th of April, when we're considering the division of revenue bill. If there are any corrections or omissions from members, if none, I would request for a mover. Moves.